Welcome to Euractiv's Digital Brief podcast. My name is Luca Bertuzzi, your digital and media editor. This week, we look at killer acquisitions, a key concept in competition policy that is in dire need of further empirical evidence. For an overview of all things digital in the EU, sign up to our free newsletter or visit the website euractiv.com. This is Euractiv's Digital Brief podcast. Today I have not one but two guests, Dr. Reinhold Kessler, Research Associate at the University of Zurich. Hello, Reinhold.
Hello.
And Dr. Pauline Affelt, Research Associate at DIW and at the Technical University of Berlin. Hello, Pauline.
Hello.
So we are here to talk about killer acquisitions. Could you please elaborate on the term? And why this is relevant for competition policy?
Killer acquisition involves an incumbent that takes over a prospective entrant solely to discontinue the target's innovation and by this preempt competition. And a study by Cunningham, Ederer and Ma shows this for the pharmaceutical industry. And this industry is particularly suited to study the issue of killer acquisitions as projects follow development stages that can be observed. And one may identify the overlap between the acquirers and the target's portfolio, so you have a good idea of the next competitor. And Cunningham and co-authors find these killer acquisitions to especially take place just below important notification thresholds of merger control. And these findings raised considerable concerns also for the digital sector. For example, in the 10 years leading up to 2020, the GAFAM, so Google, Apple, Facebook, Amazon, Microsoft, acquired more than 400 firms, predominantly in the technological sector. These are often young and innovative startups that do not have a large turnover yet. And this is why many of those acquisitions were overlooked and not even reviewed by the competition authorities, because they did not reach traditional turnover thresholds for merger control.
So we often hear about these killer acquisitions in the terms of hundreds, but you felt there was a lack of empirical evidence. Could you please elaborate on this?
I think the problem in the digital area is that there is not any empirical evidence on this, because there is no data available. So even though the potentially anti-competitive effects of these acquisitions by these big tech companies are a major concern in the policy debate, there's almost no studies on this. And this is why we try to provide some first empirical evidence, at least by looking at these acquisitions and see what happens to the acquired firm and their products.
And what were your main findings for this research?
Maybe let me first explain a little bit the data we have. So what we did is we started by collecting a list of all acquisitions by these, in particular, these five companies. So GAFAM for the period 2015 to 2019. These are over 200 acquisitions. And we could then identify 54 of those that also involved an app. And out of these 24 acquisitions of apps, actually concern apps that where the app is the main part of the business. So let me give you an example. Also, LinkedIn has an app, but this is not the main part of the business. And we then matched these acquired apps with a comprehensive web scrape data set covering almost all apps available on the Google Play Store. So for acquired apps, other apps owned by these five companies, as well as competing apps, we observe basically all information that is publicly available. So including whether the app is for pay, whether the app was updated, or which kind of data and permissions the app requests. And what we then try to do is we try to quantify the effects of these acquisitions by GAFAM on the acquired app's characteristics in terms of prices, so whether the app is for pay or not, in terms of quality, so which type of permissions the app collects, where permissions are both a measure of functionality but also the data collected, and innovation, approximated by whether the app was recently updated. And what we find is that compared to the whole Play Store, GAFAM seems to target more attractive apps, attractive with respect to updating. So these are apps that are more frequently updated. Attractive with respect to data collection. So these are apps that request more privacy-sensitive permissions and attractive in terms of demand, so they have a large number of installations and ratings. We also see that about half of the apps that are acquired by GAFAM are discontinued post-acquisition. Apple, Facebook, and Microsoft predominantly shelf the acquired apps, and the pattern is less conclusive for Google and Amazon. We see that apps that are discontinued post-acquisition tend to be smaller apps in terms of user numbers. They are less frequently updated, and they are also less privacy intrusive than apps that are continued post-acquisition. And following the acquisition, the monetization strategy seems to change. So apps become more frequently free of charge, but they then also request more privacy-sensitive permissions. So they collect more data from the users once they are part of GAFAM.
So if I get this right, the tech giants are targeting ads with a broad client base that are innovative and that are essentially providing insights into customers through their data. And when these apps are less interesting, they're just discontinued, so they are off the market following the acquisition. Is that right?
It's true that on the one hand, we observe that these apps request more privacy-sensitive permissions once they are part of GAFAM, so they are more privacy-intrusive. On the other hand, we also observe that they become free of charge, which is good news for consumers, maybe to some extent. But it's true that more user data being requested may potentially be privacy intrusive and thus bad for consumers, but we still have to consider that it may also increase functionality. Take, for example, a navigation app that requests to track the user's location, and this may in turn improve the quality of service. So more privacy-sensitive permissions may also increase functionality. And it's very important to distinguish the two components, so the privacy intrusiveness part, but also the increased functionality. However, there's still this potential fear that once the app is acquired by GAFAM, user data that is being requested by the acquired app can be transferred to the acquiring firm. This is beyond the scope of our paper, but it is a justified concern that was also the subject of the Facebook-WhatsApp merger proceedings. So I think this is really one consequence that we can make of our finding that this fear was a justified concern in the Facebook-WhatsApp merger proceedings, and one that needs to be also considered in the future proceedings. What we also found, and Paulina mentioned it, that half of the apps that are acquired by GAFAM are discontinued post-acquisition. And it is important to note that these are not directly translated to killer acquisitions. So we won't make the claim that these are killer acquisitions, because to some extent it can be also an efficient outcome to abandon an app or not maintain an app in the absence of product success or because of motives like acquihires or technological transfer, because you can also imagine that these apps may to some extent be also financially constrained to commercialize the innovation. And distinguishing these mechanisms and identifying killer acquisition would be empirically challenging. If I go back to the pharmaceutical industry and try to compare it with the digital sphere, it's hard for once to predict the success of certain products. So you don't really know which product is then commercialized and really successful on the market. And there are also an abundance of products and many entrants that come into the market. So you're also not really sure from which market potentially competing firms might arise. And so if we think about the very famous example, the takeover by Facebook of Instagram. Back then, it was merely a photo app rather than a social network. And it is difficult to assess before whether Instagram would have been developed into a competitor to Facebook. That being said, It was an app with a huge user growth and user base. And maybe one final note on some consequences for businesses that we haven't looked into, but will do in a follow-up paper, is the impact on competitors in the relevant product markets. So there are some studies suggesting that the entry or the acquisition by GFM may discourage innovation and entry by others. And I think this is also one thing that one needs to also consider in this debate about killer acquisitions in big tech.
So if GAFAM companies enter the market, competitors might be less inclined to innovate. You just said we don't know enough about that yet. But from a consumer perspective, what you mentioned is that often these apps are upgraded and there are better services. So from a consumer perspective, why is this a problem?
The problem is that with these permissions collected, part of this is functionality. So if apps are updated and they add new functionalities, this is, of course, good for consumers. But it also means that these apps collect more data. And then there's also this fear that this data might actually be combined, right, with other data that these big tech companies already own.
Okay, coming to the policy debate, the Digital Markets Act is the key legislation that intends to regulate big tech. Germany, the Netherlands, and France have recently published a non-paper to argue for including merger control measures into the DMA. What is your recommendation to the policymakers? Is the DMA the right place to include these provisions, or should it be part of a broader merger control regulation?
We contribute at least first empirical evidence to contribute to this debate about whether merger control needs to be updated to account for the particular features of digital industries, and also whether there has been under enforcement in the digital area. And I think our findings at least highlight that outcome measures other than price and turnover, like, for example, data collected, are important in these digital industries. And what is not in this paper, but what we are looking into now, is also that innovation, so more long-term effects should be looked at. And we also see that a large share of apps are discontinued. So it might actually be that these acquisitions are limiting competition and they were not reviewed by competition authorities, right? But the DMA, in the first place, it's a regulatory tool that contains behavioral obligations for these large online platforms, so-called gatekeepers. And these obligations are aimed at reducing entry barriers and promoting entry and ensuring fairness in the relationship between the platform and the different user groups. But right now, the proposals of the DMA only states that gatekeepers have an obligation to inform the European Commission about their planned acquisitions, right? But it doesn't say anything about merger control, and also not whether it means that more and also, let's say, smaller acquisition in terms of turnover will be scrutinized. So to me, it's yet unclear what the DMA actually means for merger control in digital areas. And I think the statement you alluded to from Germany, France, and the Netherlands, they clearly state that the DMA should be strengthened by being clearer on the scope and also highlighting that merger control vis-a-vis gatekeepers should be strengthened. So I think this is important to decide what thresholds for acquisitions by these gatekeeper platforms of targets with low turnover but high value should be. And I think there's already some competition authorities that do that, right? So, for example, Germany and Austria, they already use also transaction value rather than turnover thresholds to decide whether they investigate a case. I think this will be important to discuss. So when actually these cases should be looked into, and the DMA is not clear on this yet.
That's all we got time for this week. Don't forget to sign up to our free Digital Brief newsletter to receive a comprehensive overview on digital affairs in the world of European politics and policy directly in your mailbox. Also, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast published on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Amazon Music. I'm your Luca Bertuzzi, and thank you for listening.